Tomorrow is Colorado's primary in the Republicans' U.S. Senate race between Ken Buck and Jane Norton has revolved around a former Colorado Right to Life board member, Greg Golyansky. Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Well, Jane Norton has dragged Golyansky's name through the mud. Greg, a pro-life member in good standing with Colorado Right to Life, and Jane Norton, a supporter of killing some children, as her own website states. Greg was a law-abiding gun dealer who was railroaded by Democrat Tom Strickland working for the Clinton administration. Strickland wanted to make a name for himself after the Columbine massacre. Well, here at Bob Enyart Live, I've intentionally stayed out of this race because both candidates, Norton and Ken Buck, have endorsed Personhood Amendment 62. But Jane Norton betrays her true position in that she has refused to change her claim on her own website that defends the killing of some children. On Jane Norton's website, for example, she supports the killing of a child if her father is a rapist. So Jane Norton's public claim to support Amendment 62 contradicts her true position, so she is consciously lying to get pro-life votes. Whereas on KHOW Radio, Ken Buck has just said that he's against abortion, even for rape and incest, because he said if it's a person, you don't kill him for the crimes of his father. So very true. So I've decided to weigh in on the Greg Golyansky issue, which Jane Norton has twisted into an accusation against Ken Buck as a prosecutor. So Greg and his employees were hit with 111 charges of gun violations, all of which were eventually dropped in exchange for a misdemeanor plea bargain, and the judge punished the prosecutors by sentencing Greg to only one day of probation. How about that? From 111 charges to one day of probation, I've been sentenced to more than that for conspiracy to loiter. And I'm not kidding. So we're going to hear the audio from a popular YouTube video telling Greg Golyansky's story. Listen during it to the comment by Dave Koppel. And when this ends, you'll see why. Let's hear it.
As Benjamin Franklin once observed, half-truth is a great lie.
I'm Jane Norton, running for Senate. I approve this message.
You've read about criminal defendant Gregory Golyansky, the same criminal implicated in a shooting, the same criminal who pled guilty to weapons charges in federal court. And now, that same criminal is giving big dollars to Ken Buck's campaign. Ethics scandals, dishonest ads, dirty money. Paid for by Jane Norton for Colorado.
As Benjamin Franklin once said, half-truth is a great lie. And that's what Jane Norton been doing with her radio ads. She's been telling half-truth with respect to about my reputation and about what happened 10 years ago. You may have noticed I have an accent. I was born in Kiev, Ukraine. I came to this country 30 years ago as a political refugee.
My name is Leonard Golyansky. I come original from Russia in 1977.
Living under the rule of communism is always difficult. There's no freedom. Government is oppressive. Being Jewish makes things doubly difficult. You suffer from poverty. You suffer fear from political persecution, not being able to express yourself. Or you suffer fear from simply being abused on the whim of some high-ranking government official who's just happens to dislike you. Soviet government had decided to allow some Jews to leave Soviet Union We had no idea that we would actually be allowed to leave. When you live in this totalitarian society, there are no guarantees of any kind. But we finally made it. We were shouting, and there were some tears. Our lengthy ordeal under the heel of communism was over. But it takes years before it really sinks in, before you really begin to understand that that you are free now.
We started from the zero, and we built up our life here.
As time went on, I finally managed to learn English. Yeah. I graduated from Vanderbilt in 1986 with a degree in economics. My family by then was living in Denver.
And my brother, after college, came in Denver, and we opened a new pawn shop, and he became my partner.
My brother Leonard and I, we opened our small business. It took a lot of work and determination, but I think I internalized the values of what it means to be an American. Regard myself as an American. I don't consider myself a Russian American or Jewish American or Ukrainian American or anything like that. I don't believe in hyphenated Americans. I am an American, period. Yes, we opened our store in 1990. At the time, we worked 7 days a week.
First, it was 7 days a week. Even when my younger son was born, 7 o'clock in the morning, 10 o'clock in the morning, I opened my store. Same day.
The only days we took off were national holidays. Other than that, we worked 7 days a week for almost 2 years. Since then, we've been working 6 days a week. Coming here from the Soviet Union, my family was quite penniless, and we needed many things. We had next to nothing. We came from Soviet Union with basically a suitcase. I'm grateful to America for giving us the opportunity to work hard and to prosper. America is the greatest country on the planet, but unfortunately it consists of people, and not all people are good. American people are great people in general, but there are some rotten apples. I was a fairly vocal advocate for the Second Amendment. Colorado Bureau investigation engaged in very abusive practices. They wanted to know the number of guns that person wanted to buy. After that, they started to demand the social security number of firearms buyers. This was not information that they were entitled to. They only had to say yes or no. I also discovered that too many African Americans were being denied. Among the denials, 93% were African Americans. So I complained to several legislators. They wrote letters to Colorado Bureau Investigations. Colorado Bureau Investigation replied that we have done nothing wrong, but we will not going to do it again, which was the admission of that they were doing something wrong. As a result of my activism and complaints to legislators, the Colorado Bureau Investigation was forced to abandon its illegal practices. I also gave an interview to Denver Post, and within a few weeks after that article, I was given a note by several BATF agents who came into my store, and I was told that I am a target of grand jury investigation. After I was indicted, the grand jury also indicted my brother and one of my employees.
Well, we think it's our right to sell it guns. We never do nothing wrong, because actually we was like a middleman. We sell it guns after CBI approved sale.
Indictment is essentially a fancy word for accusation. It was the beginning of the witch hunt. This case, or what we call it an ordeal, lasted for nearly 3.5 years. Their only witness was some sort of a homeless woman who was suffering from a severe mental disease known as a bipolar manic depression. Woman had no credibility whatsoever, but in order to hide that, the government never mentioned to my defense attorneys the fact that the woman was suffering from bipolar manic depression. The reason we found out about this witness's mental disease was because an agent from a Federal Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms simply came to our defense attorney on his own will and spent 2 hours talking to them on tape, telling them that government have no case against us and the whole thing was nothing but a fraud. The government was accusing us of and conducting something called straw purchase. What constitutes a straw purchase is when a person buys a firearm for somebody who's under the law is not allowed to own one. The case was so flimsy that 15 career prosecutors who was asked to prosecute that case at the office of the Attorney General before Tom Strickland came to office. It was under another Attorney General named Henry Solano. He and his top aide, Stephanie Biaforte, absolutely refused to take this case.
Because there's no case there. We never do nothing wrong. We do everything by law.
In fact, we understand that Stephanie Biaforte has written a memo describing why this case should not be pursued. This memo, by the way, is still under the lock and key. It has not been released to public. You cannot get it even under Freedom of Information Act. And the question is, why does the government still hide that memo? When Tom Strickland came to office, he needed to become famous to run for the United States Senate. So that case was resurrected. No career prosecutor would still touch it. So Tom Strickland brought two people from the outside of the office.
Politician, he won't make career, and he need some noise. You see, and he can't touch the big guys who sell the gun. He finds a couple small guys and make a lot of noise, but he's loose.
Actually, I think he brought one attorney from private sector, from his lobbying law firm. The other attorney was brought here from Washington, D.C., and if I understand correctly, that particular attorney was some sort of a political appointee in Washington. David Koppel, a leading Second Amendment expert in the country, had this to say about this case.
How does this case go forward when, you know, Strickland can't find one single real career prosecutor in the U.S. Attorney's Office to bring this case? He brings in some of his own lawyers, including one from the big lobbying firm, lobbyist firm that he used to work for, and he gives the case to them, you know, basically to his handpicked cronies. And their performance in this case is so abusive that the Tenth Circuit Court of Appeals unanimously rules they should be sanctioned in the case of United States versus Golyansky. And people who want to read about Strickland's abusive prosecution and that, you can look it up on the Internet on the Tenth Circuit website. The citation is 291 F3rd 1245.
Despite the fact that government had no case, Tom Strickland still managed to come up with 37 counts of indictment against my brother, my employee, and me. The case dragged on for 3.5 years. The government understood that there were only two ways to convict me of something: find me guilty or destroy me financially. They could not find me guilty. They could not convict me of anything because I was innocent. Over this period of 3.5 years, I spent $600,000 defending myself and my brother.
3.5 years, we lost all the money.
It put my business on the verge of bankruptcy.
I got my heart attack.
My brother ended up in the hospital with a heart attack. My mother's health began to fail. And so if I spend $600,000, I've heard that government spend $2 to $3 million. And remember, that's $2 to $3 million of taxpayers' dollars. In the end, government have dropped all 37 counts against my brother. They've dropped all 37 counts against my employee. And they dropped all 37 counts against me as well. But they have decided that I alone should plead guilty to a minor paperwork violation. As a result of this prosecution, I also lost my gun license. And I, having spent $600,000 defending myself, I no longer had the resources to fight government in court to get my license back. According to my attorneys, they were told by the prosecutors that in Tom Strickland's opinion, I was regarded as a dangerous anti-government activist, quote unquote, simply for standing up for my and others' Second Amendment rights, for questioning government practices of demanding gun buyers' social security numbers, demanding to know how many guns being bought, and issuing too many denials when African Americans wanted to purchase a firearm and exercise their Second Amendment rights. That was the reason why I was the only one who was forced to plead guilty to this misdemeanor. My brother was completely acquitted. My employer was completely acquitted. But I was the only one who was forced to plead to a misdemeanor. As a punishment for this misdemeanor, I was sentenced to 1 day probation, which I was also told by my attorney was a way of for a judge to insult prosecutors for bringing such a flimsy case into his court. And I realized that it is nearly impossible for private citizens to prevail against ambitious and corrupt politicians. Ten years after this nightmare was over, now there is another politician, this time it's from my own party, who is willing to sacrifice decency and justice for her own political gain.
There were 37 federal criminal indictments.
Jane Norton began her witch hunt, and she's obviously determined to milk it for all it's worth.
37 criminal charges were pled down to one misdemeanor.
It's not easy to say how I feel. I feel mad because she's lying. She's lying to the people. It's not was like this. We was innocent. And that's not only my opinion. That's a court.
I'm a private citizen. I'm not running for any office. So why is it that Jane Norton constantly drags my name through mud instead of addressing the issues that this country faces? And why is her campaign manager, Josh Penry, when referring to our case, say that guns were sold illegally? That is not true. In her radio ad, Jane Norton brought up the fact that years before conflict with Tom Strickland, I was implicated in the shooting of a person. What Jane Norton deliberately failed to mention was that this crazed man was trying to run down my brother and me on our parking lot at the end of the business day. The incident was ruled justifiable self-defense by the authorities, and I was simply using my Second Amendment rights to protect the lives of my brother and myself. As Jews, my family and I were persecuted in the Soviet Union. When we came to America, I thought that we left that persecution behind the Iron Curtain. I guess I was wrong.
When it has hurt me and hurt my brother, but we absolutely believe not everybody in the United States, not everybody who won't be in the government, bad like a Jew.
You're listening to Bob Inyart Live on Denver's 50,000 watt AM 670 and online at kgov.com. You heard in this YouTube report by Greg Goliansky, the voice of Dave Koppel, one of America's notable gun rights advocates. Koppel holds positions with Colorado's Independence Institute and at the Cato Institute. Dave Koppel, welcome to Bob Inyart Live.
Hi, Bob. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. This is some story with Jane Norton using this supposedly to show that Ken Buck is not qualified to be a government official, and the truth seems exactly the opposite.
Well, and the truth seems to be that Jane has showed herself to be quite unqualified for any position of trust or honor, given her eagerness to maliciously destroy Greg Goliansky's reputation in service of her own ambition.
So Greg has ended up, I mentioned at the beginning of the show that he's a former board member of Colorado Right to Life, and they, of course, have an amendment on the ballot in November, Amendment 62, a personhood amendment. So at any rate, he's a member in good standing in the pro-life community in Colorado. He's a gun rights advocate. We share those positions with Greg.
And he's also on the board of the Colorado Union of Taxpayers, by the way.
Okay. And so, yeah, he's a stand-up guy who saw firsthand the tyranny of communist countries with his brother, and the idea of harassing people for owning guns, for purchasing guns, for being a law-abiding gun dealer doesn't sit well with him. But Jane Norton is willing to use that from the Clinton administration, no less, against Ken Buck. To what extent has she made this a significant issue?
Oh, huge. It's been an enormous part of her advertising, probably the single largest thing she's advertised on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and she claims she's pro Second Amendment, but I think actions speak louder than words, and that's why the, for example, the National Association for Gun Rights has urged, which is based in Colorado, has sent out a mailing urging people not to vote for her in the primary.
Well, this is an issue where just after Columbine, Tom Strickland needs to make a name for himself, and so he goes after Greg Golianski, who's a law-abiding gun dealer. And do I have it right that of all the charges, all 111 charges were dropped, and in a plea bargain, he ends up being sentenced to one day probation?
Yeah, and I think when a federal judge sentences somebody to one day probation, that's a that's as much of the judge saying this was a ridiculous case that never should have been brought in the first place.
Well, Dave Koppel, I know that you don't know my background, but I was convicted in Denver of conspiracy to loiter, and I got a sentence.
Conspiracy to loiter. Now, most loiterers really do it in a spontaneous kind of way.
You're not kidding. But in Denver, hey, if they want you, they will go after you. And I mean, I got quite a sentence. But one day probation, I would have celebrated if I got that for a sentence. So this was politically motivated to begin with. It was an attack on somebody who values the freedoms that America should stand for. He values life, the God-given right to defend ourselves, and I appreciate you pointing out that Greg also stands for low taxes, and this is the guy that Jane Norton has chosen to drag through the mud to find something to throw at Ken Buck.
You know, could you imagine if she actually got into the Senate, where, of course, senators become chairs of committees and subcommittees? And then rather than just having advertising dollars to try to destroy someone's reputation, she would have the subpoena power and the ability to hold these kangaroo court Senate hearings on somebody. And who knows who she would target? I mean, you can't even really predict it in a sense, because as of, say, May 1st this year, you wouldn't say, well, Greg Golianski is in the danger zone from Jane Norton, but then... by happenstance, it turned out that it was to her advantage to start trying to destroy him, and there she went.
And when this nightmare was mostly over and forgotten for him, maybe not forgotten, but mostly over, Jane Norton resurrects it. Now, she said that he's this big dollar donor to Ken Buck for Senate. We just checked on the Colorado Secretary of State's website. Looks like he gave a total in the last 2 years of $700.
That's right, but that's sort of typical for Jane, is throwing around charges which insinuate corruption or wrongdoing while stopping just short of the line of committing a formal libel.
And how about in her ad when she said that that he pled guilty to weapons charges? And now it was a paperwork violation.
Not weapons charges, one single charge that was a paperwork violation involving the sale of weapons.
Right. So, Jane, if I heard it right, her ad says he pled guilty to weapons charges. Is that correct?
Not really. It's deliberately misleading. I suppose you could say weapons, a charge related to paperwork involving the lawful sale of a weapon.
Hmm. So, Dave Koppel, you are known as standing up for the right to keep and bear arms. When did you find out about this case with Greg Golianski? How did you get involved?
Well, I've known about this case involving Greg ever since Bill Clinton's then U.S. Attorney Tom Strickland started persecuting Greg back in 1999. But when Jane Norton resurrected this for her extremely cynical political advantage, I wanted to speak out to the people of Colorado and the country to let her let them know really about this, how unfair this is, and how my friend's Greg's reputation is being falsely maligned.
We here on Bob and Yurt Live, we have interviewed the heads of quite a few gun rights groups over the years. We've been on 5 days a week for 20 years. This is a 50,000 watt AM station out of Denver. And the Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership, Gun Rights of America. And what I have seen over these two decades is that people who fight to defend the right to own guns, the rights of gun dealers, they understand the issues that are at stake. We're talking about fundamental freedom when we're talking about the right to keep and bear arms.
That's right. And so when somebody tells you that they're pro-gun, but then as soon as they find it advantageous to start attacking a pro-gun activist, destroying his reputation and in fact, celebrating this really malicious and abusive prosecution, I think that tells you a lot about that person's true attitudes.
Dave, we're almost out of time. And on the issue of the right to own guns and then the confiscation of guns, you wrote something a few years ago in National Review about the Nazis confiscating guns.
Yes.
Could I ask you a question about that?
Because shoot.
Because I've got an ongoing feud with another Denver radio talk show host. Every time I mention on the air that the Germans confiscated the guns of some of the people they later murdered millions of, namely the Jews, on KHAL Radio, Peter Boyles goes on the air the next day and rants that the Germans, the Nazis, never confiscated guns. And a few years ago, I gave Peter the documentation that, in fact, they did confiscate guns, for example, from Jews. He corrected that on the air, but then even to a week ago, he forgets and he rants saying the Nazis never confiscated guns. Which side is right on that little dispute there?
Well, I'm not one of those guys who gets up at 5 o'clock in the morning to be able to listen to Peter. So I can't vouch for what he said or not said, but it is certainly true that the Nazis used registration lists to confiscate guns, not only from German Jews, but from people in other conquered countries as well, and from non-Jewish. Anybody non-Jewish, any German who was even in any very slight way suspected of not being an enthusiast for the Nazi regime.
Yeah, you wrote in National Review that gun control, gun registration, gun control helped Hitler murder millions of people.
Criminals have an easier time with unarmed victims.
Hmm. Yeah, what a great point. Well, Dave Koppel, thanks for being a friend to Greg Golianski and to the truth. Thanks for standing up for our right to bear arms.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate that. That is Dave Koppel with the Independence Institute and the Cato Institute. And this is Bob Benyart. Tomorrow's the primary, and Ken Buck, hey, he's pro-Amendment 62. That says a lot.